Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Today, we're plunging into a realm that, well, at first glance, sounds like it's ripped straight from the pages of a science fiction novel.
It really does, doesn't it?
But here's the mind-bending twist. It's very much real, happening all around us, and astonishingly, even inside us. What if the most fundamental processes of life, you know, from how a simple plant breathes light into energy to the uncanny way birds navigate thousands of miles across continents, aren't solely governed by the familiar rules of chemistry and classical physics?
Right, the usual suspects.
But by something far stranger, far deeper, we're talking about the enigmatic world of quantum mechanics actively at play within living organisms.
It's an absolutely groundbreaking and, frankly, rapidly evolving field, often referred to as quantum biology. And for decades, you know, the quantum world with its probabilities, superpositions, and that famous spooky action at a distance, well, it was thought to be confined to the realm of the subatomic.
Yeah, like super cold labs, right? Isolated system.
Yeah, it's exactly. Isolated, extremely cold, highly controlled laboratory conditions. But quantum biology is daring to ask this really revolutionary question. What if life itself, in its astonishing ingenuity, hasn't just managed to tolerate these peculiar quantum rules, but has actually evolved to exploit them for its own advantage?
Exploit them. Wow.
It's truly about bridging what seemed like this insurmountable gap between two vastly different scales of scientific understanding. Physics down here, biology up there.
That's the core of our exploration today.
Yeah.
Our mission, if you will, is to take these mind-bending quantum phenomena concepts like superposition, entanglement, tunneling, and show you that they aren't just abstract theoretical physics.
Not just equations on a blackboard.
Exactly. They are, in fact, surprising, tangible facts woven into the very fabric of life. We'll uncover how understanding these intricate quantum mechanisms promises to revolutionize fields we care deeply about. From medicine and how we discover new drugs.
Huge implications there.
To material science and the next generation of technologies, and even how we produce sustainable energy for our planet. You might find yourself saying, aha, more than once, and we promise to guide you through these complex ideas in a way that's accessible and genuinely captivating without ever feeling overwhelmed.
We'll try our best.
Consider us your expert guides on this incredible journey to the quantum heart of life. Okay, let's unpack this by first grounding ourselves in what quantum biology actually is. For much of scientific history, there felt like this enormous chasm. On one side, you had the microscopic, probabilistic, and frankly, quite bizarre world of quantum mechanics.
Definitely bizarre by our everyday standards.
And on the other, the macroscopic, seemingly predictable, and incredibly complex world of biology. Most biologists traditionally felt that life operated perfectly well under the classical laws of physics. You know, molecules bumping into each other, chemical reactions happening like billiard balls, all very Newtonian.
That's a very accurate representation of the historical perspective, and for good reason. I mean, classical mechanics, with its deterministic rules, has indeed explained a vast array of biological processes with remarkable success.
Sure. Things like blood flow, nerve impulses.
Exactly. Think about how we understand all that. Much of it is well described by classical physics. However, as our scientific tools have become incredibly more refined, allowing us to peer deeper and deeper into the fundamental processes of life.
Down to the molecular level and even smaller.
Precisely. We're now encountering phenomena, particularly those involving interactions at the atomic and subatomic levels, where classical explanations start to strain, to falter, or simply fall short.
They just don't quite fit the data anymore.
Right. This is precisely where quantum mechanics becomes not just an interesting theoretical aside, but potentially essential for a complete, nuanced understanding. So quantum biology is the innovative scientific field that investigates the influence of these quantum mechanical principles on biological processes, effectively bridging that perceived gap. It's about recognizing that at life's most fundamental level, the weirdness of quantum mechanics might be less an anomaly and more, well, more a feature, something life actually uses.
So it's about looking at those absolute tiniest interactions, the dance of electrons, the subtle shifts of protons, and asking, are the peculiar rules of quantum physics actually giving life a profound evolutionary edge? What are these foundational pillars, these weird rules from the quantum realm that we need to grasp to understand quantum biology?
Well, we truly begin with the bedrock of quantum theory itself. Think of Erwin Schrödinger's wave equation, formulated way back in 1926.
A long time ago now.
It really is. It provided the fundamental mathematical language for describing how matter and energy behave at these incredibly small atomic scales. basically the starting point for understanding virtually all quantum systems.
Okay, the foundation.
Then we encounter concepts that really challenge our everyday intuition, like wave-particle duality. This is where particles, even something as fundamental as an electron or a proton, don't just act like tiny, solid, localized balls.
Like little billiard balls.
Right. They also exhibit wave-like properties, simultaneously spreading out and interfering like ripples on a pond. This dual nature is absolutely fundamental to all quantum behavior, allowing for phenomena that would be utterly impossible under classical physics. It's like a single ripple of water that is the entire wave, not just a point.
It sounds incredibly delicate, almost as if the act of looking at something changes it. Is this what's at the heart of the uncertainty principle?
You're touching on a key consequence of wave-particle duality there. The uncertainty principle, formulated by Heisenberg, highlights a fundamental inherent limitation in our ability to simultaneously know certain pairs of properties of a particle.
Like where it is and where it's going.
Exactly, like its exact position and its momentum. The more precisely you try to determine one, the less precisely you can know the other. And crucially, it's not about our measurement tools being imperfect. It's a built-in feature of reality at the quantum scale.
Wow. Okay, and then we get to the really strange stuff. The concepts that truly push the boundaries of common sense. Let's talk about superposition. For our listeners, perhaps we can imagine a spinning coin. Until it lands and reveals a definite side in a quantum sense, it could be considered both heads and tails at the same time. Is that fair?
That's a wonderfully intuitive analogy for superposition, actually. In the quantum world, it's the ability of a quantum particle to exist in multiple possible states concurrently, like being in two places at once or having two different energy levels simultaneously, or even spinning in two opposite directions.
All at the same time.
It literally inhabits all these possibilities at once until it interacts with its environment or is observed or measured. Only then does it collapse, as we say, into a single definite state.
Okay, so that's undeniably weird, but for me, entanglement always wins for most baffling. It's often dramatically called spooky action at a distance.
Indeed, spooky action at a distance was Albert Einstein's famous phrase for it, and it captures the essence of its strangeness perfectly. Entanglement describes this profound, almost magical connection between two or more particles.
Magical is a good word for it.
Once entangled, the quantum state of each particle cannot be described independently of the others, even when they are separated by vast distances across a room, across a galaxy. It makes no difference.
No difference at all.
None. If you measure a property of one entangled particle, say its spin, you instantly know the corresponding property of its partner, no matter how far apart they are. There's no classical way for that information to travel that fast, or even instantly. It's an instantaneous correlation, as if they are fundamentally part of a single, larger quantum entity.
Mind-blowing. And then there's quantum tunneling. For our listeners, I like to think about trying to walk straight through a solid wall instead of finding a door or climbing over it. Classically, it's utterly impossible.
Utterly impossible, yes.
But for tiny particles, it's a very real phenomenon.
It is, and it's a critical one for biology, as we'll see. Quantum tunneling is the phenomena where a particle can effectively pass through an energy barrier that, according to classical physics, it simply doesn't have enough energy to overcome.
It doesn't have the oomph to get over the top.
Exactly. Instead of needing to climb over the barrier, the particle's wave function actually extends into and through it, allowing it to essentially teleport to the other side. This is possible because of their wave-like nature. The probability wave isn't zero inside the barrier.
So there's a chance it just appears on the other side.
A non-zero probability, yes. And this effect is most significant for light particles, such as electrons and particularly hydrogen atoms, which includes protons. For example, a proton, which is just a hydrogen nucleus, can tunnel over a distance of approximately 0.58 angstroms.
Which sounds tiny.
It is incredibly small, 1/10 billionth of a meter. But at the molecular scale, this seemingly minuscule distance is profoundly significant. It means reactions that would be impossible or incredibly slow by classical standards can actually occur with surprisingly high probability.
So these particles are literally taking shortcuts, bypassing energy barriers that physics, as we understood it for centuries, said were impossible. This efficiency, this sort of coordinated behavior, brings us to our final foundational pillar, quantum coherence. How does that fit into the picture?
Right. Quantum coherence. It's the capacity of quantum systems to maintain a precise phase relationship across different parts of the system. Think of it like waves staying in step with each other. This allows them to effectively exist in multiple states concurrently and act as a single unified wave.
Like a coordinated dance.
Exactly. It's what allows for that superposition of pathways we'll discuss in photosynthesis. Mm-hmm. Maintaining this coherence, this delicate quantum harmony, especially in the wet, noisy, and warm environment of a living cell, that's one of the most astonishing discoveries in quantum biology.
That seems like it should fall apart instantly.
You'd think so. But it's crucial for efficient energy transfer, acting almost like a symphony conductor, guiding energy precisely where it needs to go with minimal loss.
Now that we have a grasp of these fundamental quantum principles, superposition, entanglement, tunneling, coherence, let's see how they might be operating in the greatest shit on Earth, life itself. We'll start with arguably the most important biological process on the planet, photosynthesis.
Absolutely fundamental.
It's nature's ultimate solar panel, converting sunlight into chemical energy. The efficiency of this process is just astounding, right? Almost every absorbed sunlight photon is converted to chemical energy.
Near perfect conversion. It's incredible.
If you compare that to our best human-engineered solar panels, they're nowhere near that efficient. How does nature achieve such near-perfect rates? Because classical incoherent energy transfer, which we might imagine like a hot potato being passed randomly from one molecule to the next, simply struggles to explain this incredible efficiency. It would be too slow, too lossy.
That's precisely the efficiency enigma that quantum biology seeks to unravel in photosynthesis. It's where quantum coherence steps in as a truly compelling explanation. When a photon of light is captured by a light harvesting complex in a plant or bacterium, it doesn't just excite a single molecule.
Not just one target.
No. Instead, it creates an excitant, which you can think of as a packet of light energy that's now delocalized or spread out across multiple pigment molecules at once. It's a quantum superposition of excited states.
So it's not just one molecule getting excited and passing the energy along sequentially, like dominoes falling?
Not quite like dominoes, no.
It's a whole group of them in a combined quantum state, all feeling the energy simultaneously. That's quite a leap from classical understanding.
It truly is. Instead of the energy hopping from one molecule to the next in a linear, random, step-by-step fashion, the energy is transferred in a wave-like, highly coherent manner.
Like a wave washing over the whole complex.
That's a good way to think of it. This allows this excitation to simultaneously explore multiple pathways within the intricate molecular complex, essentially scouting out the most efficient, least resistant route to the reaction center where the actual chemical energy conversion happens.
So it finds the best path instantly, almost.
In a quantum sense, yes. This prevents the energy from getting trapped in local minima, which are essentially dead ends in the energy landscape where the energy would just dissipate as heat, and maximizes its chances of reaching the reaction center with minimal loss. A key system that has served as a paradigmatic model for studying this phenomenon is the Fenna-Matthews-Olson, or FMO complex.
FMO complex.
Like it's found in green sulfur bacteria and consists of 7 bacterial chlorophyll molecules, and it's known for its incredibly efficient energy transfer. It's been a workhorse for studying these effects.
This all sounds almost too perfect, too delicate to happen in the messy, bustling environment of a living cell. You'd think all that biological noise, the constant vibrations, the random molecular collisions, the warmth would just instantly destroy such fragile quantum coherence.
That's the immediate thought, yes. It seems counterintuitive.
But I understand there's a truly counterintuitive insight here. A noisy advantage.
This is, without a doubt, one of the most fascinating and surprising aspects of quantum biology. While the protein environment surrounding these excitants does indeed induce thermal dephasing, which typically destroys coherence.
As you expect.
It paradoxically improves the overall efficiency of energy transfer. This is a mechanism known as noise-assisted transport.
Noise-assisted? How does that work?
Think of it like this. If you have a ball trying to find its way through a complex, bumpy maze, a little bit of jiggling, a bit of noise, can actually help the ball avoid getting stuck in a shallow dip and instead find the quickest path to the exit.
Ah, okay, so the noise helps it explore better.
Exactly. In photosynthesis, this interplay of coherence and a carefully tuned level of decoherence, the noise works synergistically. The noise prevents the system from getting too stuck in any single coherent pathway, constantly nudging it towards the optimal route. This noise-assisted transport is believed to be particularly important in higher plants, where the natural energy landscape might not always be perfectly inclined towards the reaction center.
So it needs a little quantum help to find the way.
Precisely, making quantum assistance even more beneficial for finding the path of least resistance. Nature's found a balance.
That's truly incredible that life can not only tolerate quantum weirdness, but actively leverage the messiness of its environment for peak performance. And we're not just talking about theoretical models here, are we? There have been some groundbreaking experimental breakthroughs that have allowed scientists to actually see this in action.
Absolutely. The theoretical concept was solidified by pioneering work in the 1990s and early 2000s by researchers like Gregory Scholes and Graham Fleming, but observing it directly required incredibly sophisticated techniques.
Like super fast cameras, essentially.
Kind of, but for energy flow. A key experimental tool that allowed scientists to finally see this quantum dance in biological systems has been 2D Fourier transform electronic spectroscopy.
Okay, that's a mouthful.
It is. But basically, this advanced technique lets researchers track the flow of energy and directly measure quantum coherence with femtosecond precision. A femtosecond is a quadrillionth of a second. Unimaginably fast.
And the results from these experiments were nothing short of astonishing, from what I understand.
They truly were. A groundbreaking moment came in 2007. Engel and colleagues, using this technique, were the first to observe surprisingly long-lived coherence in the FMO complex, even at cryogenic temperatures, specifically 77 Kelvin, which is very cold.
Liquid nitrogen temperature.
Right. This coherence lasted for an impressive 660 femtoseconds. For quantum coherence in a complex biological system, that duration was considered extraordinarily long-lived at the time.
But the real question, the one that truly changed the game, was whether this quantum coherence could persist at biologically relevant temperatures, the kind of warmth you'd find inside a living plant cell, not in a super-cooled lab.
That was indeed the critical hurdle, and a crucial answer arrived in 2010 from Panichang Kun and colleagues. They demonstrated, using advanced spectroscopy, that quantum coherence persists even at biologically relevant temperatures, around 277 Kelvin in the FMO complex.
So roughly room temperature?
Close to it, yes. The coherence lasted for about 300 femtoseconds and completed almost two full oscillatory cycles, a kind of quantum vibration before being destroyed by dephasing. Crucially, this duration of coherence was long enough to satisfy the theoretical conditions for ideal energy transfer efficiency.
Wow. So it works in the real world, so to speak.
It seems so. And this wasn't a one-off finding. Further studies by other groups like Colleni and colleagues in Rhine algae, others looking at different light harvesting complexes like LH2, and in various photosynthetic bacteria like Rhodobacter spheroids. They've all provided robust confirmation.
So it's a widespread phenomenon in photosynthesis.
It appears to be. They've shown surprisingly long-lived coherences, hundreds of femtoseconds, and in some intriguing cases, even milliseconds at physiological temperatures. These timescales often exceed the typical timescales of classical random energy transfer. The real aha here is that life has found a way to not just tolerate, but actively use these incredibly fragile quantum effects, even at warm, noisy biological temperatures, to achieve near-perfect efficiency.
Something our best engineers are still struggling to replicate for our own solar technologies.
Precisely. Furthermore, it's been discovered that the protein environment isn't just noise. It also plays a protective role. It can actually increase the lifetime of certain types of coherence, like something called zero quantum coherence, by maintaining very specific and constant energy gaps between quantum states.
Almost like building a little protective cage around the quantum state.
That's a great way to visualize it. A protective molecular cage tuned by evolution.
So, the cell isn't just a passive container. It's actively managing and protecting these quantum states, fine-tuning its environment for quantum performance. That's a truly profound revelation. But there's still a big question mark, isn't there, about how this all plays out in the wild with actual sunlight?
There is, and it's a crucial and active area for future research. Most of these groundbreaking experiments, while incredibly revealing, use highly controlled, coherent laser light to excite the system.
Which is not what plants see every day.
Exactly. Natural sunlight is incoherent, a chaotic mix of photons with varying energies and phases. We still don't definitively know if quantum coherence has the same precise impact on efficiency when excitations are created by this natural incoherent sunlight. It's a complex experimental challenge.
How do you even simulate sunlight accurately in that kind of experiment?
Tough. Simulating sunlight accurately while still observing these fleeting quantum effects is difficult. But it's a scientific gap that researchers are diligently trying to address with new experimental designs and theoretical models. The ultimate goal is to see if the elegance observed with lasers translates directly to the everyday reality of a leaf absorbing messy, real-world sunlight.
Absolutely fascinating. Okay, moving on from nature's solar panels to the chemical workhorses within our own bodies. Enzymes. Enzymes speed up chemical reactions by mind-boggling factors, millions, even billions of times faster than they would occur naturally.
They are nature's catalysts, essential for life.
And this catalytic power goes far beyond what classical physics predicts. Traditional transition state theory, which imagines reactants having to climb over an energy barrier, doesn't seem to fully account for this extraordinary speed.
That's a keen observation, and it's another area where quantum mechanics, specifically quantum tunneling, offers a powerful and elegant explanation. In a vast number of enzyme-catalyzed reactions, particularly those involving the transfer of hydrogen, whether it's a hydrogen atom, H, a hydride ion, which is H with two electrons, H, or a proton, H+.
All involving that light hydrogen atom.
Yes, precisely because it's so light.
Mm.
In these reactions, quantum tunneling is believed to play a significant role. Instead of the reactants needing sufficient kinetic energy to climb over an energy barrier, these light particles, because of their wave-like nature, can literally tunnel through it.
So it's like our walking through a wall analogy again, but now it's happening at the core of our metabolic processes. How does the enzyme itself facilitate this seemingly impossible shortcut? Does it just hold things close?
It does more than just hold things close. What's truly ingenious here is the role of the enzyme's dynamic structure. Enzymes aren't rigid static structures. They are constantly vibrating and undergoing subtle conformational changes, flexing and moving.
They're breathing almost.
In a way, yes. It's believed that vibrational energy released from these protein conformational changes during the reaction subtly reduces the effective tunneling distance for the hydrogen species.
So the enzyme's movement squeezes the barrier.
It effectively compresses the activation barrier, making it narrower and thus drastically increasing the probability of the hydrogen particle tunneling through. This quantum shortcut leads to an acceleration of reaction rates that is directly comparable to the extraordinarily high rates observed in many enzyme-catalyzed reactions.
Wow.
It's a beautiful example of how the macroscopic structure and dynamics of the enzyme, its wiggling and jiggling, are exquisitely tuned to optimize a quantum event at its heart.
So the enzyme isn't just holding molecules in the right position, it's actively shaping the quantum landscape for them, almost orchestrating the quantum tunnel itself. That's incredible.
Precisely. One of the best documented and most studied cases of hydrogen tunneling in biology is the hydride transfer reaction catalyzed by dihydrofolate reductase, or DHFR.
DHFR. Okay, what does that do?
This enzyme is crucial for synthesizing DNA precursors, so it's vital for cell replication. And it's actually a target for many anti-cancer drugs for that reason. It reduces dihydrofolate using another molecule called NADPH as the hydride H-owner. Studies on DHFR have provided compelling evidence that the quantum tunneling of hydrogen is a significant factor in its remarkable catalytic speed.
So we can actually measure this tunneling effect in DHFR.
Yes, through careful kinetic isotope effect studies and computational modeling, the intricate link between macromolecular dynamics, these constant, subtle, but precise movements of these large protein structures and quantum tunneling, is a significant and actively researched area for explaining these extraordinarily high enzymatic reaction rates. It fundamentally changes how we think about the active site of an enzyme.
From just a static pocket.
To a dynamic quantum landscape, actively participating in the chemistry.
Okay, from the invisible mechanisms inside our cells, let's zoom out to a truly macroscopic yet equally mysterious phenomenon, avian navigation. Birds navigate vast distances with incredible precision, migrating thousands of miles, often to the same exact locations, without the aid of any human-made GPS.
It's one of nature's great navigation feats.
But how do they sense Earth's incredibly weak magnetic field when we humans are completely oblivious to it? It's baffled scientists for ages.
It has, but quantum biology now offers a highly compelling and increasingly supported hypothesis. First, let's look at the known properties of the avian magnetic compass, because they give us crucial clues. It's not a simple compass needle pointing north.
Not like the one in my pocket.
No, it's an inclination compass. This means it doesn't distinguish between north and south polarity directly. Instead, it senses the inclination, or the angle, of magnetic field lines relative to the Earth's surface. Think of the magnetic field lines diving into the Earth at the poles and running parallel at the equator. Birds sense this angle.
The dip angle.
Exactly, the dip angle. And crucially, if you reverse only the vertical or horizontal components of the magnetic field in a controlled experiment, birds become disoriented. However, if you reverse both components, which is essentially reversing the entire polarity, their orientation is unaffected.
Which strongly suggests they're using the angle, not the absolute direction of north or south poles.
Precisely. That's a critical detail.
And they're not just disoriented by any old magnetic field change, right? There's a specific sweet spot for its operation.
Exactly. The compass operates within a specific functional window. If the magnetic field intensity is more than about 30% lower or higher than the local geomagnetic field they're used to, birds get disoriented, though they can often reorient after some time once they adapt.
They can adjust, but it throws them off initially.
Right. And perhaps most critically, this avian compass is light dependent. It works perfectly well under blue, green, or white light.
But not red light.
But birds are completely disoriented under red light. This light dependence is a pivotal clue, strongly pointing towards a chemical rather than a purely physical mechanism at its core, something involving light absorption.
Okay, so it's definitely not like a tiny metallic compass needle in their head. That brings us to the radical pair mechanism, or RPM, a truly fascinating chemical compass hypothesis.
Precisely. This mechanism is a leading alternative to classical magnetite-based mechanisms. While birds do have magnetite particles in their upper beak, those are thought to provide information on geographical position, maybe altitude, not directional heading for migration, and importantly, they are not affected by anesthesia in the same way the compass is.
Okay, so the RPM is different. How does it work?
The RPM is based on light-initiated chemical reactions occurring in the bird's eye. Here's how it's hypothesized to work. A photon of blue or green light excites a specific donor molecule in the retina. This excited molecule then transfers an electron to a nearby acceptor molecule.
Creating two charged molecules?
Not just charged, but creating what's called a radical pair. These are two molecules, each now having an unpaired electron spin. Think of electrons usually pairing up with opposite spins. Here, you have two molecules, each with a lone unpaired electron. This makes them highly reactive and, crucially, magnetically sensitive.
So the blue or green light hits something in the bird's eye, and that light energy creates these two molecules with unpaired spins, and that's the radical pair at the heart of the compass.
Yes, that's the starting point. This radical pair is initially formed in a specific spin state, usually a singlet state where the two unpaired electron spins are antiparallel, pointing opposite directions. But then it undergoes rapid, purely quantum coherent oscillations between this singlet state and a triplet state where the electron spins are parallel, pointing the same direction.
So it flits back and forth between spin states.
Exactly. This dynamic interconversion, known as singlet-triplet, ST interconversion, is the crux of the magnetic sensitivity.
Mm.
What's crucial here is that this ST interconversion is incredibly sensitive to magnetic fields.
Even the Earth's weak field.
Yes. Even the Earth's very weak field, which is only about 50 microteslas. The external magnetic field causes what's known as Zeeman interaction, which subtly changes the energy levels of the singlet and triplet states. Additionally, internal magnetic fields arising from hyperfine interactions with the magnetic nuclei within the radical pair molecules themselves also play a key role.
Okay, so tiny magnetic fields influence how fast it flips between singlet and triplet.
Precisely. These subtle magnetic interactions influence the rate at which the radical pair switches between its singlet and triplet states. Over time, the radical pair eventually reacts chemically, but the type of chemical product formed depends on whether it was in the singlet or triplet state at the moment of reaction. So if the external magnetic field, like Earth's, changes direction relative to the molecule, the ST oscillation rates change, altering the proportion of singlet and triplet products formed.
And the bird's brain can somehow detect that difference.
That's the hypothesis. The bird's biochemistry is thought to detect this change in product ratios, perhaps via the visual system, providing the directional information. For this mechanism to be sensitive enough to Earth's weak field, the radical pair must maintain its quantum coherence and have a lifetime of approximately 1 microsecond long enough for the weak field to exert its subtle influence before the coherence is lost or the pair reacts.
And because it's light dependent and happens in the eye.
Exactly. This vision-based hypothesis suggests these radical pairs are formed in the eyes of birds, essentially allowing them to see the magnetic field as patterns of light and dark overlaid on their normal vision.
That still sounds like pure science fiction, almost like a superpower. But I understand there's a significant body of compelling experimental evidence building up for this radical pair mechanism. It's not just theory.
Indeed. It's backed by some clever experiments. To test the RPM, researchers have ingeniously designed experiments using oscillating radio frequency, or RF, fields. These are low-energy electromagnetic fields.
Like radio waves.
Exactly. These fields are known to disrupt radical pair reactions by messing with the spin states, but they would have absolutely no effect on a classical magnetite-based compass.
Okay, so if RF fields mess up bird navigation, it points to RPM.
That's the logic. A series of pioneering experiments in the mid-2000s by groups led by Thalau, Ritz, and the Vilchkos, using European robins, provided compelling, albeit indirect, evidence. They found that when weak RF fields with specific frequencies like 1.315 MHz or 7 MHz were applied at an angle, like 24 degrees or 48 degrees, to the static geomagnetic field, the birds became completely disoriented. They couldn't find their migratory direction.
But only when the RF field was at an angle.
Yes. Crucially, when the RF field was applied parallel to the geomagnetic field, the birds oriented normally. This disruptive effect at specific angles is attributed to the RF frequency being resonant with the tiny energy level splittings caused by the geomagnetic field, thereby interfering with the delicate ST-inter conversion within the radical pair.
So it's almost like a finely tuned radio frequency jamming the bird's internal quantum compass, specifically at the frequencies relevant to the quantum interactions, and only if the jamming signal comes from the side.
That's a perfect analogy. Further research in 2009 by the Vilchko group really strengthened this. They demonstrated disorientation at specific resonant frequencies, like that 1.315 MHz for Zeeman splitting, and crucially showed that the specific frequency needed to cause disorientation scaled directly with the strength of the static magnetic field they applied.
Ah, so changing the main field changed the jamming frequency needed.
Exactly. That direct scaling strongly supports a radical pair model, especially one where one of the radicals in the pair has no hyperfine interactions, a specific quantum characteristic predicted by the models. These observations, consistently replicated, provide very strong evidence for the RPM as the underlying mechanism.
It's a beautiful example of how physics, chemistry, and biology intertwine at the quantum level.
Okay, and what about the actual molecule in the bird's eye that might be doing all this quantum magic? Is there a prime candidate molecule for this chemical compass?
There is a leading candidate that ticks almost all the theoretical boxes. Cryptochromes.
Cryptochromes, what are they?
These are a class of flavor proteins containing a light-absorbing flavin molecule found in the retina of birds. And what's crucial is that upon excitation by blue-green light, they are known to produce precisely these radical pairs we've been talking about.
And blue-green light is exactly the wavelengths birds need to navigate.
Precisely. It lines up perfectly. Cryptochromes meet several key theoretical requirements. For example, one specific type, cryptochrome 1A, or CRY1A, has been shown in lab studies to form remarkably long-lived radical pairs, with lifetimes measured in milliseconds.
Milliseconds? That's way longer than the 1 microsecond needed. Way longer. Easily long enough for the Earth's weak magnetic field to influence the radical pair's spin dynamics. Furthermore, studies have shown that CRY1A proteins seem to be orderly aligned within specific photoreceptor cells in the bird's retina, called ultraviolet-violet or UVV cones.
So they're not just randomly floating around, they're lined up.
They appear to be lined up, possibly along the cell membranes. And these cones are uniformly distributed across the retina, which would allow the bird to detect magnetic information from all spatial directions as it moves its head. And crucially, these specific receptor cells are connected to a known visual pathway.
A pathway in the brain.
Yes, from retinal ganglion cells to a specific forebrain area known as cluster N, which, through separate lesion studies, is independently known to be absolutely vital for magnetoreception. If you damage cluster N in a robin, it loses its magnetic compass ability.
Wow. So you have the molecule, the light dependence, the right lifetime, the alignment in the eye, and the connection to the right brain area. That seems incredibly convincing.
This molecular, cellular, and neurological evidence, when pieced together, presents a very compelling picture. It really does seem like cryptochromes are the key. It's enough to make you look at a robin in your backyard and wonder what secret quantum messages it's receiving from the Earth itself, a truly humbling thought.
That's an amazing convergence of evidence. It seems to tick all the major boxes. But is it a slam dunk yet? Are there still lingering questions or scientific debates around cryptochromes and the RPM? Or is the case closed?
Oh, definitely not closed. Science always leaves room for refinement and further investigation. And there are indeed some puzzling, unexplained phenomena. For example, remember how angled RF fields disrupt orientation?
Yeah.
Well, oscillating RF fields parallel to the static geomagnetic field produce no effect on orientation. Current radical pair models don't fully explain this puzzling observation. Why does parallel have no effect? It suggests there might be nuances we're still missing in our understanding of how these quantum processes interact with external fields, maybe involving the alignment of the molecules.
Okay, so a detail still to figure out.
Right. More importantly, while cryptochromes are highly suggestive candidates, direct and conclusive experimental evidence that they are the sole magnetoreceptor molecules, unequivocally linking their quantum activity in vivo to the bird's actual navigational behavior, is still sought. It's very hard proof to get.
We need the smoking gun linking the molecule directly to the behavior.
Exactly. We also need to determine if the RPM is essential for avian navigation, or simply one of several possible mechanisms operating in parallel or perhaps used in different contexts, like short versus long flights. And then there's the light spectrum question.
Ah, yes, the green light problem.
Well, CRY1A forms radical pairs most efficiently with blue light, but birds also orient quite well under green light. Is there another cryptochrome, perhaps CRY4, which is also found in the retina, or maybe another photoreceptor entirely, involved in magnetoreception under green light? Or does CRY1A function adequately with green light too? These are all key, fascinating areas for ongoing and future investigation.
It's incredible how many open questions remain in such a seemingly fundamental process, like a bird finding its way home. But it truly highlights the frontier nature of this field. Now, beyond these relatively well-studied examples like photosynthesis, enzymes, and navigation, are there any other areas where quantum effects might be at play, even if they're a bit more speculative or just beginning to be explored?
There are indeed other fascinating, albeit often more speculative, avenues being explored. This shows just how pervasive these quantum insights might become. For instance, in olfaction, our sense of smell.
How we smell things.
Yes. There's the intriguing idea that the precise molecular recognition in our noses might involve more than just a classical key and lock fit based on shape. Some theories, proposed by Luca Turin, for instance, suggest that electron tunneling could be involved.
Tunneling for smell, however.
The idea is that receptors in the nose might detect the specific vibrational frequencies of molecules lodged in them via electrons tunneling across the molecule only if the vibration matches an energy gap. It's called the vibrational theory of olfaction. It's controversial, but interesting.
So smelling the vibe of the molecule, literally.
Kind of. Quantum entanglement is also being theorized, perhaps speculatively, to play a role in long-range communication within DNA molecules, maybe influencing how genetic information is accessed or even repaired over distances.
Wow, entanglement in DNA.
It's very theoretical at this stage. The notoriously complex process of how proteins achieve their specific 3D structures, known as protein folding, is another area where quantum effects are being explored, possibly speeding up the search for the correct lowest energy fold among countless possibilities.
Helping proteins fold faster.
Potentially. And then, of course, you get into the truly controversial and deeply philosophical theories, dating back to pioneers like Niels Bohr and Erwin Schrödinger themselves, and more recently discussed by researchers like Roger Penrose and Stuart Hameroff or Max Tegmark.
Ah, the connection to consciousness.
Exactly. Suggesting quantum effects in the microtubules within neurons in the brain, and even potentially consciousness itself, while these are still very much on the fringes of accepted science and highly debated.
Very much so.
They highlight the vast untapped potential and the sheer audacity of this field, asking if quantum mechanics underlies even the most profound aspects of our existence.
This all sounds like a field with absolutely massive potential, extending far beyond just understanding the fundamental mechanisms of life. If we can truly understand and perhaps even learn to harness these hidden quantum secrets of biology, what kind of quantum leap could this mean for humanity? Let's start with medicine and pharmacy. How could quantum biology revolutionize healthcare?
The implications for medicine are truly profound and could reshape how we approach health and disease entirely. One major area is smarter drug discovery and design.
Finding new medicines faster.
Faster and better. By leveraging our deeper understanding of quantum tunneling and enzyme catalysis, for example, we could design more effective drugs that actively utilize these quantum shortcuts to inhibit enzymes more effectively, or maybe even design enzyme mimics. But the real game changer here, potentially, is quantum computing.
Ah, using quantum computers for biology.
Yes. It has the unprecedented potential to process vast data sets of molecular information and simulate incredibly complex molecular properties and protein-ligand interactions, how drugs bind to targets with an efficiency far beyond anything classical computers can achieve.
Because molecules are inherently quantum systems.
Exactly. Simulating them accurately requires quantum computation. This could drastically accelerate the development and optimization of new drug candidates, identifying effective compounds much, much faster and predicting their effects more accurately.
So it's about predicting how drugs will interact with our bodies at a quantum level, making the whole drug development process faster, more precise, and less reliant on expensive, slow trial and error.
Exactly. This precision extends beautifully to personalized medicine. Quantum computing could analyze massive amounts of patient data genomics, proteomics, metabolomics, maybe even real-time cellular data from sensors, to identify subtle biomarkers and predict individual responses to drugs with unparalleled accuracy.
Tailoring treatments to the individual.
Truly personalized treatment plans tailored to each patient's unique quantum-influenced biology and disease profile, moving us away from a one-size-fits-all approach to truly bespoke healthcare.
That's the dream. What about diagnostics?
Beyond drug design and personalization, quantum biology can lead to advanced diagnostics. Quantum sensors, which harness phenomena like superposition and entanglement, offer potentially unprecedented sensitivity and precision.
Sensing things at the single molecule level.
Potentially, yes. Imagine detecting disease biomarkers, like tiny circulating tumor cells or viral particles, at incredibly early stages, long before symptoms even appear. These sensors could monitor disease progression with extreme accuracy and maybe even enable point-of-care diagnostics that are far more effective, faster, and less invasive than what we have today, bringing cutting-edge detection right to the patient, maybe even via wearables.
And even for drug delivery itself, quantum materials could play a role, allowing for highly targeted treatments.
Yes, novel drug delivery systems are another incredibly promising application. Quantum materials, such as precisely engineered quantum dots.
Tiny semiconductor crystals.
Exactly. They could be used as highly fluorescent probes for imaging, allowing doctors to see disease processes at a molecular level with incredible resolution inside the body. They could also be integrated into controlled-release drug delivery systems, perhaps triggered by specific biological signals, allowing for precise targeting of specific cells or tissues, and controlled optimal dosage over time, minimizing side effects and maximizing efficacy. The potential here is transformative.
That's truly incredible. Now, what about material science? Could we actually build entirely new materials inspired by life's ingenious quantum playbook? Taking lessons from photosynthesis, for example?
Absolutely. This is where the bio-inspired aspect really shines. By studying the quantum principles at work in biological systems, how light harvesting complexes optimize energy transfer, how enzymes use tunneling researchers can get ideas for designing novel quantum materials with unique and revolutionary properties.
Like what kinds of properties?
Imagine materials with high-temperature superconductivity that don't require extreme cooling with liquid helium. That would dramatically reduce energy loss in electronics and power grids, or perhaps even self-healing capabilities, where materials can repair themselves at a molecular level when damaged, mimicking biological tissues.
Self-healing plastics or metals? Wow.
These are not far-fetched ideas. They're directly inspired by trying to understand and replicate nature's quantum engineering. These bio-inspired quantum materials could utterly transform fields like electronics, energy storage, sensing, catalysis, offering capabilities that are currently beyond our reach, leading to lighter, stronger, smarter, and more efficient technologies across the board.
And finally, energy production. Given what we've learned today about the astonishing efficiency of photosynthesis, this seems like a natural fit for quantum biology to offer sustainable solutions. It feels like the most obvious application almost.
It is indeed a very compelling one. Understanding the quantum mechanisms of natural photosynthesis, how plants achieve that near-perfect energy capture and transfer using coherence and noise, can directly inform the development of highly efficient artificial systems for sustainable energy generation.
Like building an artificial leaf.
Exactly. We could design artificial leaves or advanced solar cells that mimic this quantum coherence, capturing sunlight with similar unprecedented efficiency and converting it directly into clean fuel, like hydrogen, or into electricity. This could be a huge game changer in our quest for abundant renewable energy.
Moving beyond silicon solar panels.
Potentially, yes. Additionally, the insights from quantum materials could lead to the creation of entirely new types of batteries with superior energy storage capabilities, far beyond what current lithium-ion technology offers. These hypothetical quantum batteries might exploit collective quantum effects to store more energy, charge almost instantaneously, and degrade much slower.
Super fast charging, long-lasting batteries.
That's the hope. It could further advance our transition to sustainable energy solutions for everything from electric vehicles to storing wind and solar power on the grid.
This has all been incredibly exciting, hinting at a true revolution across science and technology. The potential seems almost limitless, but with such powerful potential, there must be considerations about its broader impact, right? A double-edged sword of progress, if you will. We need to think about the downsides, too.
That's an absolutely critical point to consider, and it's essential we address these questions proactively, not after the fact. The advancement of quantum biology, like any powerful new scientific and technological frontier, think AI, genetic engineering, raises important ethical questions that we must grapple with now.
Such as?
For instance, imagine those highly advanced quantum-enhanced medical technologies, ultra-sensitive diagnostics, hyper-personalized drugs we just talked about. Could these innovations inadvertently exacerbate existing healthcare inequalities?
If they're incredibly expensive.
Exactly. If only a select few can afford these cutting-edge diagnostics or bespoke treatments, it could significantly widen the gap between the haves and have-nots in healthcare. That's a serious concern. Similarly, the development of advanced quantum materials and other quantum technologies could have both profound positive and negative consequences for society, depending on how they're developed, regulated, and ultimately applied. Who controls them? Who benefits?
We must ensure these powerful tools benefit all of humanity, not just a privileged few.
That has to be the goal.
So it's not just about the scientific discovery. It's profoundly about the societal impact and ensuring responsibility. What crucial steps do we need to take to ensure this responsible development as the field continues to grow so rapidly?
To navigate this rapidly evolving landscape responsibly, several steps are absolutely crucial. First and foremost, there's the necessity of open, transparent, and continuous dialogue.
Talking about it openly.
Yes. And this needs to happen not just among scientists themselves in their labs and conferences, but crucially, between scientists, policymakers, ethicists, industry leaders, and the broader public. We need to collectively understand the potential benefits, the foreseeable risks, and try to anticipate the unforeseen consequences.
Get everyone involved in the conversation.
Absolutely. Second, the proactive development of robust ethical frameworks and guidelines is paramount. These aren't just academic exercises. These guidelines must actively steer quantum biology research and its applications towards beneficial and responsible uses, ensuring that innovation truly serves humanity broadly and upholds core values like fairness, safety, and autonomy.
It sounds like public engagement is key here. It can't just be left to the experts in labs and government offices, hashing it out behind closed doors.
Precisely. Engaging the public is not merely a formality. It's essential. It helps build trust in these emerging technologies, generate informed support for beneficial research, raise widespread awareness of the incredible potential applications, and perhaps most importantly, address any legitimate concerns or anxieties people might have about ethical implications.
Like privacy concerns with medical data, for example.
Exactly. This transparency and broad public involvement help ensure that the trajectory of quantum biology aligns with democratic values and societal well-being. These ethical frameworks and ongoing discussions must proactively address potential unintended consequences. Think about equitable distribution of benefits and rigorously protect fundamental principles like privacy and individual rights, especially concerning the vast amounts of sensitive patient data that might be analyzed in future quantum medical applications.
It's about building the bridge as we walk on it, ensuring a stable and ethical path forward.
Well put. We need foresight and caution alongside the excitement.
What an incredible mind-bending journey we've been on today. It's become abundantly clear that quantum biology is not just some scientific curiosity, a niche field for physicists to ponder in isolation.
Not at all.
It's a revolutionary, deeply interdisciplinary field that is fundamentally reshaping our perception of life itself, revealing this hidden layer of complexity and elegance we're only just beginning to grasp.
It truly is a paradigm shift in biology, maybe even in physics too. By unraveling these intricate quantum mechanisms at the heart of living systems, photosynthesis, enzyme action, navigation, maybe even smell, we stand on the cusp of immense potential.
Which potential?
For dramatically improving human health and well-being, for developing truly sustainable energy solutions, for creating revolutionary new materials, and ultimately for fostering a more prosperous and healthier future for all.
And perhaps the most exciting part is that this is still a remarkably young field, isn't it? It feels like we're just scratching the surface.
Absolutely. It's constantly evolving, with new discoveries emerging regularly, driven by ongoing research and, crucially, increasing interdisciplinary collaboration across physics, biology, chemistry, material science, even computer science.
Mm-hmm.
The quantum story of life is far, far from over. We're probably only in the first chapter.
Not at all. As we continue to peer into the quantum heart of life, what other impossible biological feats might we discover are not only possible but fundamentally necessary due to quantum mechanics? And how might these incredible insights challenge our very definition of life itself, pushing the boundaries of what we thought was even remotely achievable? The implications are truly limitless.
It really makes you wonder what else is out there, governed by these strange rules.
That's a profound thought for all of us to ponder as we continue to explore the deep dive. Thank you so much for joining us on this extraordinary, mind-bending exploration today.
My pleasure. It's a fascinating topic.
We'll see you next time.